Welcome to Lightning in a Bottle, the essential podcast for middle market business owners, key stakeholders, and the advisors who guide them. I'm Josh Pottinger, and joined by my co-host, Jason Chirogiannis. Together, we lead ATX Wealth Partners, a private wealth management team at UBS here in Austin, Texas. Now, over the course of almost 30 years, we've built a vibrant community and have curated a suite of resources tailored for your success, from insightful white papers and cutting-edge research to exclusive in-person events and expert-led podcasts. We are here to provide the tools that you need. Now, if you're considering an exit, this is likely the most significant financial decision of your life, and typically, you only have one chance to get it right. So our mission is clear: to arm you with the knowledge to enhance the value of your business, navigate a successful sale, and of course, optimize your post-exit financial outcomes. Now with that, let's dive in and unlock the strategies that will prepare you for a prosperous future. Hello, everyone. It's Josh Pottinger here. This should be a fun one. I've got a good friend and UBS colleague of mine with me today, Joyce Crivellari. Joyce, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Good, good. So before we get started on this one, I just wanted to extend an invitation to the listeners out there, those of you that are founders and key stakeholders of privately held companies. And also, if you're a professional that kind of advises this group of people, to join our Lightning community is kind of what we call it. And for this group of people, we've built up quite a few of these folks over the years. And part of our value proposition for being a part of it is we've give you access to intellectual resources like white papers that our Advanced Planning Group does or research on a particular sector, access to highly specialized people. We also do in-person events, which are really cool. One of my favorite things that we do is in-person roundtable discussions. We'll bring in an expert to come in, have a nice meal together, and talk about a particular topic. Our most recent one was on cybersecurity. It was super fun. And then finally, we've got our podcast series here, our Lightning in a Bottle podcast series that we really enjoy doing. If you're interested in being part of that community, shoot me an email and we'll pull you into the loop. All right, let's get started here. Joyce is part of the Advanced Planning team, and she's one of the most important intellectual resources for our team. And the Advanced Planning team consists of former practicing estate planning attorneys and accountants and various professionals with extensive private practice experience. And it's quite a diverse group of folks that includes also people with a focus on income and transfer tax planning, asset protection planning, business succession planning, charitable planning, all things planning related. And whenever we have a more complex case, we'll pull in Joyce and her team to help provide advice and education on specific strategies that are relevant to their particular situation. So, Joyce, the last time you and I recorded an episode, I was looking back. It's episode number 2.
Yes.
And we recorded it in March of 2020. And we didn't really push it out there until November of 2020. So when we recorded our episode, we had no idea.
No idea what was coming.
No idea that the next couple of years was going to be surreal. And so here we are towards the end of 2024, and the world has changed, and we've got an election around the corner.
We do.
We were just talking before the show that maybe we should have recorded this after the election.
Right. Later next week.
So Joyce is going to give us a prediction on who's going to win today.
Joyce will not be doing that today.
And then we'll reconvene in the first quarter. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But no, the reason I wanted to have Joyce back on the show is because there are some critical pieces of legislation that's going to be expiring very soon. And what I'm talking about specifically is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that is going to be sunsetting soon. And this is something that we've been pounding the table with a lot of folks, is like, you got to get on. If you're going to do anything of substance here with respect to some estate planning or some kind of preemptive planning before you exit a business or sell a business or a large asset, you have to start getting on it now, because there's some critical things that are going away at the end of 2025. So I just wanted to set the stage for the episode here. So we're going to be talking about this specific deal that's going to be going away. We're going to be talking about some estate planning, succession planning, some various strategies that are out there. Let's get into it, Joyce.
All right. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. So with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act sunsetting soon, what should business owners really be paying attention to? What are some of the big changes that could really impact them? And for those that really haven't done any real planning yet, what should they be thinking about right now?
Yes, there's a lot in those questions that you just laid out there, Josh. But I'll say, just to start off, there are some things in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that will be sunsetting, some of the state and local tax limitations, things like that, that will also be sunsetting. So make sure that you're having conversations with your accountants and your other tax advisors just to see how those other pieces of the Act that are sunsetting and how those may affect your business and your tax reporting and things like that. But the real crux of what we've been talking about and what people are really very dialed in on is the wealth transfer, estate, and gift tax side of this sunset. And, you know, we've been talking about this for several years now, preparing leading up to this day. It's kind of crazy that it's upon us. And what we're talking about specifically is the sunset is going to happen at the end of 2025. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act will sunset December 31st as it's legislated on the books. It will sunset. We'll have to wait and see what actually happens. But I think we need to proceed as if the sunset is happening December 31st, 2025. So what does that mean from an estate and gift tax standpoint? So right now, the estate and gift tax exemption is $13.61 million. It's scheduled to be $13.99 million. We just recently got those numbers for 2025. So what that means is each person, each taxpayer has today $13.61 million that they could transfer tax-free, estate tax-free at your passing, or gift tax-free if you were to make a gift of, say, interest in your closely held business during your lifetime. And in 2025, that number, as I mentioned, jumps up to $13.99 million per person. But upon the sunset, it's going to dial all the way back to $5 million per person, indexed for inflation. So we don't know exactly what that number is going to be. We think it will be somewhere between $7 and $8 million. But if you think about that for an individual, you know, today or in 2025, you can transfer or gift $13.99 million. In 2026, it will only be $8.7 million. So anything over that 13.9 or post-sunset, that $7 to $8 million, will be taxed at 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make gifts during your lifetime and you use up that lifetime exemption, then you will have used the exemption. If you use it before the sunset, then you'll use it at the higher number. So potentially being more tax advantageous for you because you're fully utilizing that $13.99 million before it reverts back to $7 to $8-ish.
Right. Let's say it's $8 million. Say it reverts to $8 million, $13.99. Let's roll up that up to $14 million.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to go from $14 million down to maybe $8
million. Yeah. Again, almost cut in half.
Right. And so that's a $6 million reduction in your exemption amount.
Right.
$6 million times 40% is going to be $2.4 million.
Yes.
In
so
estate
it's real
taxes.
Numbers. It's real numbers in tax savings. And this is definitely something to pay attention to.
Right. It's one of the things that we're a broken record on with,
right.
with folks. It's like, if you want to write a check to the government at, you know, $2.4 million and you're fine with that,
then don't do anything.
Then don't do anything, you know, if you don't care. Like, some people do have that kind of view, like, you know what, I'm going to be gone, I don't care.
Right.
You know, but you do have some optionality to be more strategic, more tactical with your wealth today, and maybe allocate that to nonprofits, allocate it to family members. And yeah, and so the clock is ticking. Just anecdotally, one of our clients had reached out to an estate attorney recently, and they said they're not taking on any more cases this year.
Yes, that's the next big hurdle. You know, I think it's one thing to say, gosh, we need to really take a look at this. We need to look at our assets and our balance sheet. And, you know, maybe our business that we own is the asset that makes the most sense to consider doing some gifting with. But we're going to wait and see what happens. We're going to wait halfway through 2025 and just kind of take our time. You know, you really might be unhappy when you find yourself in that position and there are no attorneys that will be able to help you with your planning. What we've encouraging the families that we work with to do is have the conversations now, formulate in your mind, yes, I do want to look into taking advantage of this opportunity while I have it, or no, I understand the risk of not doing so, but I'm not going to do so. But at least to have the conversations, decide what you want to do or don't want to do. And then if you want to move forward and be poised to do so, talk to the attorney now. Begin setting up the vehicles that you would use to effectuate these strategies now. Like, get poised to move. And then when you're ready to make that final decision and say, yes, let's do it, you're in a good position. You're not starting at square one at that point.
Right. Obviously, we have a big election coming up very soon. So when this is out, we'll know the results of everything. But, you know, right now there's a big question mark on the razor thin margins right now. We don't know who's going to end up taking it this time around. And then you've got Congress that could potentially, it looks like it's probably a decent probability it'll be split Congress. If that's the case, it might be difficult to get anything really done, right? Mm-hmm. And so my point is that I think we need to act as if
I agree.
This is going to sunset.
And I think the other piece of that, I think we do need to act on what is currently legislated and what is on the books and what is scheduled to happen. And then the other piece of this, you know, if you think about, you know, a married couple each using $14 million of exemption in 2025, that's, you know, $28 million or up to, you know, you don't have to do the full amount. You can do anything, you know, up to that amount. But that's a big decision, right?
Yes.
And so I think another piece of it is when you think through, do we want to do this? Does it make sense for us as a family and us as business owners to use this exemption before it potentially goes away? And we're going to move forward as if it is sunsetting and going to be cut in half. But you also need to kind of think of the, what if the law doesn't change and we go ahead and make this decision and we make this substantial gift to an irrevocable vehicle, a trust, for example, and the sunset doesn't happen or it happens for a short period of time, are we still going to be okay having made this decision? So when I said early on, you know, there's a lot packed into those questions that you laid out, I really mean that. There's a lot to consider both from a tax standpoint, tax efficiency standpoint, and then just a kind of a gut feeling for you personally and your family, what feels right.
Do you feel like your interactions with the clients that you've been meeting with in the last few months or so, would you say that they're feeling anxious, or what's the general kind of mood?
I feel like it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely a lot of interest in having these conversations. Our clients see the importance of educating themselves and having conversations with me, my colleagues, with you, your teams, about what the options are, what the landscape looks like. I would say there's a intense curiosity and responsibility. Maybe not. I haven't seen it necessarily rise to the level of anxiousness yet in, you know, a large number of clients. It's more about, hey, we know this is coming. We're in a situation where if the sunset happens, our estate tax picture changes dramatically. Even for clients that are kind of on the bubble, maybe they're at 28 to 30 to 35 million right now. But if we revert back to a 14 million total exemption for a married couple, that will dramatically change things for them. I wouldn't necessarily say anxiousness, just an interest and an intensity about having the conversation and being aware of the information and their options so they can make decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, our little tagline on our website is be informed so that you understand what your options are and start planning early. You don't need to necessarily pull the trigger right now, but at least lay the groundwork.
Exactly. Right? And that's what I meant by saying be poised. You know, they're having the conversations. We are having the conversations. I'm having a lot of conversations with attorneys now about blueprints and plans that clients want to be ready to implement. But yes, being poised and ready to pull the trigger on kind of a relatively short note. And I think, you know, to your point, knowing the information, being informed, that's the critical piece. And whether you decide, yes, I'm going to make some substantial wealth transfers now, or we're choosing not to, we understand what the upside and downside would be. You know, either way you decide, being informed is key.
Right. So let's talk about that. That's a good segue to our next question here. So when it comes to things like estate planning and succession, Are there any specific strategies that come to mind that business owners should kind of rethink about with the upcoming tax changes?
Specific strategies, yep. Such as, here's where we get into all of our acronyms. I knew that was coming.
Oh, I forgot to do that. I was going to do that in the beginning, like do the little acronym game.
You still can if you want to.
I'm going
to
go SLAT, GRAT, IDGET, NIMCRUT, NIMCRAT.
Yep.
What are some other?
Those are some good
those
ones.
Those are good ones, right?
Yeah, those are the tried and true good ones.
There's about 20 other ones.
Yeah, there are a lot out there. We love our acronyms in the estate planning world.
Yes.
But to your question about what are some of the strategies, what I'm seeing families do the most right now is utilizing irrevocable trusts. Irrevocable trusts are kind of the cornerstone for wealth transfer strategies, you know, making irrevocable completed gifts so that assets and the future appreciation on assets are outside of your estate for estate tax purposes. And so all the acronyms that you just mentioned are various types of irrevocable trusts. And the two that we see the most are our multi-generational descendants trust. You'll hear people say dynasty trust. It's basically a trust for children, grandchildren, and so on, depending on what state you create the trust in will determine some of the longevity, the can it be a perpetual trust or is it limited to a certain number of years? But in any event, multi-generational trust planning, using these larger exemptions, making gifts of interest in a closely held business at today's valuation, which could be lower than valuation at the time of an exit or a sale down the road, but using that at today's values, making a gift to an IDGET, which intentionally defective grantor trust, that would be set up as a descendants trust that would be available for children, grandchildren for multiple generations. So kind of that down the fairway descendants trust planning we're seeing a lot of. And then also the other acronym that you mentioned right in, on the top two is the SLAT, the Spousal Lifetime Access Trust, which is the same idea as a multi-generational descendants trust. But the biggest difference is that your spouse can be a primary or a permissible beneficiary of that trust. So there are a lot of nuances when you're doing SLAT planning. So I want to put a little caution and disclaimer out there. When you're doing SLAT planning, you want to make sure that you work with an attorney who is very familiar with the ins and outs of SLATs. And people will ask all the time, can we each do a SLAT for each other? That sounds like a great strategy. And you really would need to have some in-depth conversations with your attorneys. Some attorneys are comfortable with each spouse creating a SLAT under certain circumstances. The trusts have to be different from each other. They should be done at different times. I mean, they really have to be two separate estate planning strategies. Other attorneys are not comfortable with both spouses doing a SLAT, so they may have one spouse use the SLAT and the other use their exemption gifting to a descendants trust.
Right.
But again, important to know the ins and outs, the advantages, the considerations, the pros, the cons. But those are the two strategies that we're seeing the most in light of this, should we use our exemption before a sunset?
Right. So when we talked about earlier, there's, let's just call it like $6 million reduction in exemption, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when that sunset.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah. And so when we talk, I wanted to just kind of give an example to the audience here, like what the reason why we're talking about taking ownership units of an asset that's most likely going to grow into the future. You know, if you take $10 million worth of a business or an asset that's going to continue to grow into the future, and you take that and put it, take it outside of your estate and use 7%, we can use a rule of 72, which is you take your expected return, you divide 72 by your expected return, and the answer is how many years it'll double.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just use some back of the envelope numbers. If we're saying you get a 7.2% return, that would mean that would double every 10 years. And so if you're a 50-year-old, and you're going to live another 30, 40, potentially 50 years in front of you, you take $10 million out of your estate today, and that's going to double to $20 million in 10 years, and that's going to double again to $40 million, and double again to $80 million. And you take 40% tax on $80 million, you're talking about huge
right.
tax liabilities that you have shifted outside of your estate.
Yes.
And pass that on to future generations. And now you've created truly multi-generational wealth.
Right.
Yeah.
And just to clarify one point, not to clarify, but to make sure that, you know, everyone understands this, that's when you make the gift of the whatever amount you make, 10 million, 13 million, the appreciation, if that grows to that 80 million, all of it is out of your estate for estate tax purposes. So right, saving that yeah. tax dollars that you just laid out.
Yeah. And that's where this can become extremely powerful if you look at it in the context of your lifetime, absolutely. Not just today. So the more important thing is what is this, you know, growing to over time?
Yes, it can be very impactful. And I think it's also important, you know, we've been focusing on the tax efficiency side of things. I think it's also important to think about the personal feeling side of things, because it might be a really great strategy to transfer $14, $28 million to a trust that then grows outside of your estate, but only if, you know, the principal owners are comfortable doing that. You want to make sure that you have all access to all of the assets and the liquidity for your lifestyle, your needs and your wants for your 30, 40, 50 more years that you have left that you just mentioned. So I think that balance is very important. You don't want to take moves solely for tax purposes. You also want to make sure that it feels like the right thing to do for you and your family and for your own liquidity needs and lifestyle maintenance and all of that going forward.
And that's where it's so important to have a legitimate financial plan
right.
in place to ensure that your personal balance sheet was well capitalized to be able to accommodate your lifestyle that you desire.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that you don't want to go giving away all this
gifts.
Money and then all of a sudden you don't have the money you
right.
want to do what you want.
Right.
Right. And so
yes.
we see this often with founders of companies that have their initial exit, the first exit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's truly the time where they capitalize their personal balance sheet.
Right.
It's like this, you know, this big chunk of money, you know, if it's $100 million, $200 million kind of exit, they've overcapitalized their balance sheet mm-hmm. and they've got...
And they may have some room to make some gifts.
And they've got some room yeah. to make some gifts,
yeah.
right? But depending on the lifestyle, if they have an exit for $10 million or $20 million or $30 million, maybe they don't want to gift, you know, that $28 million right now.
Keep those chips for you
yes.
and then look to future planning. Yeah, that's exactly my point in looking at your specific mm-hmm. circumstances, your specific needs, and making the decisions, even though there are some great tax strategies that you might be able to utilize, but only if it makes sense for you and your mental well-being and your comfort level going forward and your sleep at night. So it is important to consider all of the tax and non-tax related.
We have one particular case that's right on that bubble. You know, it's a kind of that 30, 35 million, and they just don't really want to give away all that kind of money. But I'm confident that this particular client will be doing something else in his next chapter that will, you know, I think has a high probability of having another very successful deal. That's an opportunity where you can take some of those new things
right.
and push those out.
Yes.
And if they hit big, then it hits big outside the estate, right?
Yes. So. Yeah. He can do the future opportunities inside in an irrevocable trust or something like that.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but it's important to stay close with your tax and legal counsel.
Yes.
And I would argue your wealth management team.
Absolutely. Yes. And I mean, to that point, Josh, I mean, this is a time I'm a huge proponent that, you know, your wealth management team, your CPA, your estate planning attorney, that should be one team that talks to each other.
Right.
And really kind of builds that team around the client. And that is definitely true in this period of time that we're in right now, between now and sunset. So pulling all of those advisors together and building that team around the client is critical, I think, at this point.
I think it's incredibly critical and super helpful for the client, because the reason being is if you get, when we're in a room with the estate attorney and the tax expert and the client, things don't get lost in translation.
Right.
When the client has to say, hey, I was just talking to my estate attorney and he was mentioning something about the strategy. I'm not really quite sure what this trust is. And my accountant was saying something about, like, things just get lost in translation. And so when you get everybody together and you're working truly as a team, it becomes a better outcome for the client. And I think it also ends up being more economical for the client because, you know, things don't get screwed up in translation.
Definitely. Everybody's on the same page from the beginning of the book.
Yes.
You know?
And there's some language that we talk that most clients aren't in this super knowledgeable in the estate planning world. And there is a lot to kind of think through.
There is.
I mean, I've been in the business almost 30 years and I'm still having to kind of pause for a second and think through some of the various strategies we talk about. So when you get everybody in a room, it makes things a lot better. So let's think about maybe some non-technical items. Like we've covered some of the tax reasons side of things here, but what else from, you know, preparing your business from a sales standpoint, like maybe some personal things or anything before or during or afterwards you think is worth?
Yeah, kind of that timeline before a liquidity event or before the sale of that business. Yeah, I think it's important to, well, I'm going to go to one more technical thing as a part of the preparation for leading up to the sale. You want to make sure that you're, we've been talking about wealth transfer. We've been talking about estate and gift tax strategies, but I never want our clients to forget about the basic estate plan. You know, make sure you have your testamentary plan in place. If something were to happen to you, if you were to become incapacitated, having those basic, the basic blocking and tackling, a will, potentially revocable trust, powers of attorney, coordinate beneficiary designations with your overall estate plan, just kind of the basics. And a lot of times those basics are on a back burner when you've been building a company. And it's important, I think, that's not necessarily tax related, but just kind of housekeeping related. And then some other good considerations are, what do I want my life to look like post-exit? Am I going to go do this again? Am I going to be open for other opportunities that might come my way? Do I want to go out and build something again? Or do I want to go play golf and go on vacations? So I think it's important to picture your life post-sale. Also, another area that UBS has really put a lot of resources and time and energy into, because we've seen the importance of this, is how is this exit going to affect the rest of your family? What is the impact going to be on your children, your grandchildren? And the two things that we hear from our clients the most is, I want to be tax efficient, and I don't want this wealth to ruin my kids and grandkids.
Right.
And so that idea of preparing the next generations to be recipients, stewards, beneficiaries of trusts, I mean, what does that look like? And so thinking about, is that a concern of yours? And what are some steps that you may want to take pre-exit to begin preparing not just you, your balance sheet, your anticipation of what taxes may be owed and what strategies you can utilize to be efficient in that regard, but also the human side of it. How is this going to affect me, you know, mentally and personally going forward? What do I want things to look like? And what can I do to help prepare the rest of my family for this?
We had a great episode. I was telling you about our podcast with Sarah Solomon.
Yes.
And that was on the family advisory side. And we covered a lot of that.
Yep.
Just,
it's very important.
Really good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. We have some different cards. We have these little toolkits, as you know, for charitable giving, for your family.
Communication among family members. Yeah. Yep.
And last year over Thanksgiving, I took that deck of cards.
The purposeful dialogue.
Purposeful dialogue, yes. Which I thought was totally hokey when I first saw them.
Right. Everybody's like, what is this?
I totally thought they were hokey.
But then you do it. Right.
And then tears flow.
Yes. Yes.
But I did it with my entire family. I got them all together. We were up in Santa Barbara and they had no idea what I was doing. And I laid out all these cards in the middle of the room. And I said, I want everybody to pick three words. And then the next day I said, I want you to pick three images. And that evening we would discuss why you picked those words.
Yeah.
Or why you picked those images. And I tell you, God, that was just a tearjerker, you know?
Right. It's very powerful.
It is.
Yeah. And it does feel a little strange to most people at the beginning. But then, you know, if you just trust the process and do it and communicate, it's a really powerful tool. And that can be something it's uncomfortable for a lot of families. A lot of the clients and families that we work with, they're not necessarily comfortable discussing all of these things. They're not necessarily ready to open a full balance sheet to even adult children. So everybody's different in that way. And I think that you should definitely reveal and discuss and share things at your pace and what feels comfortable to you. But I think it is important to communicate and share and kind of have a plan for
I love Sarah's analogy. She's like, don't think of it as an on and off switch. Think of it as
a dimmer
switch.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of how you communicate your wealth with your kids.
Right.
Right. And I thought that made a lot of sense.
And, you know, you really can set everyone up for success by letting next generations hear from the top down. Both, I mean, on the financial side, what are the expectations, you know, from financially, but then also on the behavior, the expectations related to the wealth. You can really set a very good stage if you prepare them, and we can help with that.
For sure. I was just at the UBS Private Wealth Conference out in Florida, and we had some really wonderful speakers. And one of the speakers was talking about the tone at the top.
Mm-hmm.
The tone at the top, so important.
Yes. And not doing that, I think you really miss an opportunity for the generations to come of your family if you don't try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing too that came to mind, we were talking about your team that you have, and we've been speaking specifically about your estate planning attorney and your tax specialist. There's some other critical people that are part of the deal team when you get to that phase, preparing your company for an event, an exit of some sort. And that's going to be your investment banker, corporate tax attorney,
mm-hmm.
your valuation expert.
Yes.
And these are some other critical professionals that are going to be in your world as you prepare. And the reason why they're going to be important is because as a wealth advisor, as we kind of prepare the financial plan and the estate plan and we pull you in, our financial plan, it's like any software, garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
So if we can get more accurate numbers by interacting with the corporate attorney or the tax attorney or the investment banker or the business valuation expert and get more accurate numbers, then we can make those kind of projections and then we're going to have a more realistic view of what the scenario looks like. What kind of stock? Are they common stock, preferred stock? What's the waterfall look like? Because what most people do, they just kind of
ballpark it,
yeah. Right? And we're ballparking millions of dollars.
Yes. Let's try not to ballpark. Let's get...
Yeah, it'll be, you know, I don't know, 80 million, maybe 100 million. Well, that's $20 million difference,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, let's try to get it a little closer.
Yeah. Could be 50 or it could be 250, you know?
So these are good problems to have. These are good problems to have. Unfortunately... There's a great report that Pepperdine puts out every year. It's called the Pepperdine Private Markets Report. And they go out there and they pull all these middle market businesses. And two-thirds of them do not do any sort of preemptive planning.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do any planning. It just boggles my mind because, I mean, this is the single largest event of their life, financial event of their life. And there's some excellent things that they can do preemptively to help just make it more tax efficient and prepare them better for that next event.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think, you know, having the conversations, I know we were talking about the sunset and ideas of gifting before sunset and kind of shifting to pre-sale discussion. But in both of those arenas, having the conversation sooner rather than later is critical. So for pre-sale planning, the ideal time from an estate planning standpoint would be well ahead of any liquidity event or really any talk of a liquidity event. So thinking about the planning side of things very early on can be extremely advantageous.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we actually blasted an email out to everybody, another reminder. We did this back in February and we're doing it again. We just did it again, but the Corporate Transparency Act.
Yes.
This pain in the butt little thing. I don't know if I can, I think I could say that word, but I can't edit it out. Okay. But just give us a quick rundown on that.
Yeah. So the Corporate Transparency Act is created by the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network in order to continue to keep a handle on and mitigate money laundering, financial crimes, things like that. So how that relates to us and our clients is there is a reporting requirement for business entities. And LLCs fall under this. There are some exceptions, but I'm going to kind of keep it in a nutshell. And a high level today. And again, the
we
messages
have a great
talk
report
to
on
your,
this, by the way. If yes, you're interested in it, just send us because we have, it's like frequently asked questions mm-hmm. about this.
Yes. So essentially, there is a filing requirement for entities. Most of our clients are, they utilize LLCs for lots of different things. And so these LLCs, most of them are falling under the Corporate Transparency Act filing requirement. So you have to file a beneficial owner report for any entities. So entities that were created before January 1, 2024, you have to file the report by January 1, 2025. And then entities that were founded after January 1st, 2024, you need to file the report within 90 days. And then any changes to beneficial owners need to be reported within 30 days going forward. But there's a lot there too. And like I said, there are some exceptions to filing and things like that. So I think the big takeaway is there is this new filing requirement for beneficial owners for entities, and you need to get with your CPA to make sure. And there are filing deadlines. So you need to get with your CPA to make sure that you comply with any filing deadlines that apply to your entities.
There's some pretty severe penalties.
Yes, that's why.
Yes. It's like $500 a day or something.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah. And I think it's something that to definitely, if you haven't already gotten on top of that for your own situation,
oh my gosh,
now's the time
done
to do
it
so.
Yet myself. I've got a couple of them.
I do too. I've been thinking about it and reminding my family that we need to do that. So, yes.
Like, what is it? The cobbler's kids that don't have any shoes kind of thing. Yeah, it's definitely fall into that category. All right, we're shifting to QSBS. For those of you that don't know, it's Qualified Small Business Stock.
Mm-hmm. That could be a podcast in and of itself.
Yeah, that's episode number 11.
Oh, yes, there already is one.
Yes, episode number 11 is really, really good. And we go quite deep into QSBS. So maybe you could just share real quick what it is at the high level.
It's an opportunity for founders. And again, the scope is kind of narrow for QSBS qualification. And, you know, we won't go into the details, but again, in a nutshell, certain founding owners upon exit may be able to have a $10 million capital gains exemption or potentially multiple $10 million exemptions for if there are different taxpayers that are involved in part of the sale. So determining now if your ownership in your company qualifies as QSBS, I think that is a threshold issue to go ahead and kind of look into now so that you will know, you're not trying to figure that out when an exit is upon you, you will know, and then you can take the steps to take advantage of that $10 million capital gains exemption.
Yes. We had a client that was approached by someone earlier this year in like March, but her five-year requirement wasn't until October, and they wanted to get the deal done early on, and ultimately that ended up falling through, and they ended up selling to somebody else and just closed, shocker, in October. So they got the...
So it worked out well.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for today's purposes, just kind of planting that seed and putting that bug in everyone's ear to what QSBS is and to kind of find out if that is applicable to your ownership.
Yes. And that's capital gains taxes.
Yes.
Yes. And we've been primarily talking about estate
and gift tax.
And gift taxing.
Yes.
Right.
So, yes. So that's huge. You know, if you think about, you know, if you have close to zero basis in the company that you founded, and then upon exit, having that exemption of $10 million of capital gains would be beneficial.
Right. Yep. Yeah. We've covered some of the more, I would say, tried and true strategies, and there's some other strategies that I would say are a little bit more complex and more advanced for those that might be a little bit more aggressive in their planning, but I think that's too much for us to talk about.
We like to stick
today
with the tried and true.
Yes.
Yeah,
for
straight
sure.
Down the fairway, tried and true
sure.
Strategies. Yeah. Absolutely.
But just like an investment portfolio, and you know, when we're managing capital for clients, they have different risk tolerances. It's the same thing from a planning standpoint. You get some people that are like, look, I want latest and greatest, you know, and they're willing to take that risk, but there's risk. There's a legitimate risk with that. You know, you might have to defend that with the IRS, and that can be a very stressful period.
Yes.
But there's great tried and true black letter law strategies that are available to people that can help mitigate their estate and gift taxes.
Yeah, increase the tax efficiencies. Yeah.
Yep. And that's the goal at the end of the day, is to help create an efficient wealth management great gift strategy. We're coming up on the end here. Anything else that comes to mind that we should chat about real quick?
I think one thing that we didn't touch on, which can come into play since we were kind of closing out on pre-sale and preparing for an exit, is the philanthropic side of things. And not necessarily pre-sale, could be post-sale also. But I think one other takeaway and thing to think about in light of liquidity events with closely held businesses is utilizing philanthropic intent and vehicles in the year of the sale. It can be very advantageous. And again, kind of getting with your CPA the year of the sale and making sure that you're not missing an opportunity to fund a donor advised fund, or if your family's inclined to set up a private foundation, again, a whole nother podcast, but just the philanthropic side of that as well. We talked a lot about the wealth transfer trusts and families and slats and IGITs and all of that, but there's also that philanthropy side.
Yeah, I think that goes with not just the exit planning if you're selling a company, but if you have a large event, some sort of large
income
monetary event in a particular year, that's usually a good time to backload your charitable efforts.
Yes.
And so we have an athlete that was just drafted into the Major League Baseball world, a very talented athlete, and got a nice bonus. He's in the very high tax bracket this year and next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking to take advantage of that. And then he'll be grinding it out in the minor leagues. And that's when you can fund things like Roth or do IRA conversions, you know, Roth conversions and whatnot. So there's so many.
There's a world of things out there.
There's so many things out there, yes. And that's what I love about the career that I chose. It's just, I've been in the business almost 30 years and I'm still learning things, you know, I'm still learning things.
Yeah. And, you know, things are ever changing and it keeps it interesting, keeps it exciting. And we're just happy to be able to share the information and help our clients and prospective clients and all of our other friends out there.
That's right. Well, Joyce, I'm very thankful. I'm very grateful to have you.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
And to be a trusted colleague that we can call on and that can help our wonderful clients out. So thank you for being a good sport and joining me today.
Anytime. You know that. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you to the audience out there. We're going to wrap up here. If you have any questions, thoughts, or comments, feel free to send them over to us. And if you'd like to stay in the loop for future events and podcasts, let us know and we'll plug you in. So with that, take care, be safe, be well, and until next time, ciao.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views
this podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment services.
It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the